Welcome to Magical Moments, a podcast hosted by Jill Lindsay.
Hello, I am Jill Lindsay, a curator of experiences, products, and places. I have a community space in Fort Greene, Brooklyn that features local artists, spiritual gifts, sustainable fashion, and handmade jewelry. We also host daily events and workshops. Come visit us at 370 Myrtle Avenue and enjoy our cafe and happy hour in the garden. Check out our website, jilllindsay.com, for our selection of products and our monthly calendar of activities. The Jill Lindsay community is so special that we have created Magical Moments, a podcast showcasing creators and their inspirational journeys. Our special guests span across fashion, food, wellness, art, and business. Our mission is to inspire and help celebrate the magical moments in life. We would love to hear your stories, share them with us, and don't forget to follow us at Jill Lindsay Store, hashtag magical moments.
Welcome, friends. This is episode 8 of Magical Moments, and we are here in the Newsstand Studio in Rockefeller Center with the most shining bright star of all, Miss Amy Meredith Cox.
Hello, hello.
I am so excited for this episode. I can't wait to share all of your magic. I feel like the whole energy of the space is just like bursting at the seams.
You're so sweet.
And now I get to talk about how amazing you are.
Go ahead.
And celebrate, you know, parts of the things that you are, and then we're getting into all the magic that you are, and then whatever magic comes through on this show.
Let's go.
Amy, my goodness, here we go. Everybody, buckle your seatbelts. Amy is an American cultural anthropologist. She is a writer and a movement artist. You might know Amy as one of the instructors from The Class, a fitness and movement mindfulness practice. She has written books. She is currently writing books. One of the books that she is the author of is called Shapeshifters, Black Girls in the Choreography of Citizenship. She has received multiple awards for her work. She is a visionary in the field of culture and people and movement and storytelling. She has also been a trained dancer and performer, and she has been with the Ailey 2, which is the second company of the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, and she's also been with the Dance Theater of Harlem. She has choreographed performances and has interventions in public and private space in Newark, Philadelphia, and Brooklyn. Amy, let's keep going, Amy. Also, she's got the brightest smile.
That's plenty.
Got the most amazing energy. I won't stop. Amy and I share a deep love of jewelry and fragrance.
Yes.
Amy is also a dedicated yogi. She is an incredible yoga teacher. She holds teacher trainings. She does retreats. You can find her in Brooklyn at Prema Yoga. And really, just find her. Everybody needs to find you.
Thank you for this.
She's also a professor at NYU. You have students. You teach things that are important to the future of the world in culture, in anthropology. You are such an inspiration.
Aw, Jill, that was beautiful. Thank you for that.
Thank you for being you.
Thank you.
And I'm so excited to just share, like, your passion. You know, you meet a lot of people in your lifetime, and Amy has been one of those people who, the second you meet them, the depth of who you are transmutes into the world.
Mm.
Whether it's over a matcha, in the yoga class.
I love a good matcha.
In the class.
Or a bad matcha.
In your, you know, in your apartment, on a walk. Whatever you do exudes so much. And I just, the world is such a better place with you in it.
Thank you. I feel the exact same way about you. Mm. Everything. Your smile, your light, your energy. It is an honor to be your friend and to be in conversation with you, truly.
I love you. This is going to get so fun, you guys. I'm telling you, buckle the seatbelts. Well, we're going to start off this amazing episode with the tarot card pull.
Oh, yes.
And so we're here in the studio. We've got the cards fanned out. Amy is going to pull a card that represents the beginning of this episode for her. This is a card for you.
Okay, I'm feeling the energy. I know I can't take all day.
You can take as much time as you want. If this episode becomes a one card pull, that's what it's meant to be. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun.
Yes.
All right. The Ace of Wands.
Okay.
This is a card that has been coming up quite a lot recently.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, wands are all about movement.
Okay.
And I'm going to show the audience here our little card. So it's a card that has a magic wand. And in this magic wand, there are roses. There are circles of light. You can see it's a very strong, clear, and pure card.
Mm, the Ace.
The Ace. And the Ace is...
beginnings or endings?
Let's talk
about
it.
I guess they're the one and the same, right?
And they are. The wisdom of Amy, you guys. She's reading the card.
I'm not the first to say that, but...
this card is a wonderful new beginning of full inspiration and growth.
Mm.
It is a time to embrace any upcoming opportunities that are coming your way. Perhaps you are on the verge of trying something new or expanding your ideas. If there is something that you've been planning on pursuing, now is the time to take action. You have the skills and the talents that you need in order to manifest your creativity into all of its power.
Mm.
All. Even though this may be the initial stage of your adventure, know that you are headed into a life-changing period that is deeply rooted in your truth.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
As a result,
you will
find the creative outlets that you need. And this is a time of action and self-expression.
Mm.
Additional meanings, creation, beginning, adventure, soul purpose, energy, vitality, birth, inheritance, and new relationships.
Yes. All that, you know, I have this book on my bookshelf in my office, and it's like, it's just like, I got it from some like cheesy store. It's like a big fat pink book, and it's called the Oracle Book. And every now and then, only when my eye goes to it, I don't think about it all the time, I just grab it. And I grabbed it yesterday, and it said, what was it? The opportunity is right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity is right. I mean, there's something that's happening clearly in a material way, an opening, just in terms of having time to actually step into a new beginning. But you know, when you're 50, I'll be 52.
What?
In like 52? Less than 2 months. And I, you know, this idea of new beginnings is beautiful, but also I feel a little resentful. Like I should be already in the thing, right?
All in one's time.
Yeah. Yeah.
All in one.
Thank you for that.
Yeah,
that beautiful reading.
This is amazing. And I think, you know, the conversations we were having before we actually started recording were all of these things that you're so interested in and like wanting to put your energy into.
Yeah.
And now is the time.
Yeah. Let's go. I mean, you know, procrastination can last for like decades.
Mm-hmm.
Even as you're moving forward and working and doing all the things, are you really doing the sole purpose? I think that's what the card said, right? Like so busy, no time in the schedule. Mm-hmm. Like, and you don't think of yourself as a procrastinator, but are you really doing the work of the spirit and the soul? Which is a courageous ask, you know? It's easy to be busy.
It is.
Doing bullshit.
And you are busy. Amy, you're busy.
Yeah.
You're doing a lot, but you do so much that's like positive out into the world that we're happy you're busy, but we're ready for you to take a break and like use that force,
to direct it. Yeah.
It's so exciting.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, well, let's share more of your magic with everybody out there because you're so special. It's so, so amazing for you to be here. You know, and I think we met during the pandemic when you started with the class.
That's right.
And we were streaming it from the downstairs at Jill Lindsay in Brooklyn.
Those days.
Those were the days. And, you know, it was so fun because you would come a little early or stay a little late and have a matcha with us. And sometimes we'd help with the playlist. And it just was like the best. And then you bringing your sister in and like getting to like build a relationship with you and a friendship with you and a sisterhood with you has just been so amazing.
That meeting, the first meeting, I don't know if you'll remember this. And I actually don't know if you were in the store at the time. It was a Saturday, so you probably were. But I had just found out that I made it into the class. I'd, you know, gone through the second round of auditions and found out that I had actually made it into the training. And my first thought, which is always my first thought, this is, the, you know, is I'm going to treat myself, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to celebrate. I'm going to treat myself. And I wanted a piece of jewelry. And your store was the first image that popped into my mind. So I hopped into an Uber and I came to Jill Lindsay. And no lie, as I'm walking through the door, I looked to the left and, you know, you have that like tray of cards from local businesses and you had a class card. And it was like the, you know, with the class logo, it was like step into the class. And I was like, what? I was like, what are the odds that as soon as I find out that I've gotten into the class, I randomly go, I hadn't been in your store for like 3 years. It'd been a minute.
Wow.
Because, you know, I come to like treat myself and I see the class card and I'm like, what? What are you doing with this? Why is this here? And then whoever was working was like, oh yeah, they record in our basement. And I just couldn't get my mind around that. Like, what? This is like a boutique. How? Because the class, if you don't know, is like very like physically, it's a fitness modality that is quite energizing and active. And Jill Lindsay's beautiful store is this beautiful boutique. And I was like, could not put those two together. But I think it speaks to the way that, I guess in my life, in your life, and then the way that we came together, these things that seem to not make sense, but are deeply aligned. Yeah. So on the surface, they seem so disparate, but like, of course. And now I'm like, I can't even imagine knowing Jill Lindsay without knowing the class and vice versa. Like all these ways that, you know, you have so beautifully. And I think the community that we're both a part of has found a way to bring these things that seem so separate into alignment.
Mm-hmm.
Because they already were.
Yeah.
Like beautiful things, right? And then it started to make sense. Like, of course, I love jewelry. And then there's scents here. And then it's also the place where I can move and share my gifts all in one place.
Yes. Share your gifts.
I didn't know that story. Yeah. So you must not have been there. I think I told you that before. I was just like, or maybe when I first met you, I told you that.
Yeah. The serendipity and like those magical moments.
It's like pulling a tarot card. And it's just like, oh, of course. Yeah. Of course the class is here.
Yeah. I personally have so many beautiful like moments with you and like things that I think about and I'm like, oh, like New Year's Eve and, you know, and then Amy moved and I asked if I could help decorate her apartment.
Thank God.
And there was this moment where the two of us are like sitting at the table, looking at Pinterest, looking online for furniture stuff. And then our friend Brooke is like, hey guys.
On the couch.
Yeah. I was like, it was like girls in a bedroom, like,
It was like flashback to freshman year.
Yeah, it felt like
college.
I was like 18 years old again.
Yeah.
And that is what this, all of this energy is, this connection.
I feel that. And it's like being 18 with resources. You know what I mean? Like being 18 with the energy of that, the energy, the excitement, the like curiosity that I feel now more than ever in my life.
Yeah.
Is like a throwback to that time of being like just on the cusp of like adulthood, young adulthood, but now I actually have some resources.
Yeah.
And I don't mean just, I don't mean just like material resources. I mean like actual like relationships and friendships and resources within myself to bring these things that were just like curiosities to life.
Yeah.
It's really exciting.
It is exciting. Well, let's talk about Amy as a young person. What movement is to you? Tell us and then I'll explain the question.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know where to begin. I can't even remember my first memory of falling in love with movement. And I don't mean dance. I mean movement, just like being in my body and what it felt like to find freedom within my body. What I will say is that I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, and we lived on, my parents just sold their house of 55 years. So I just, that past tense is really hitting me kind of hard. Our house is on 2.5 acres and that backyard was a wonderland for me. It was where my father had the most abundant vegetable garden. It was where my mother had her beautiful flower garden. At one point, we had like a vineyard and my father was making homemade wine. It was like so many things were happening. Deer would come through and there were like these huge rabbits. It was just like this incredible wildlife space and open expanse right behind, you know, in our backyard. And I would just run and play and have adventures in that backyard. But that wide open space was where I felt that I could be most free. So in running would then turn into like falling and tumbling and moving. And it was just such a beautifully rich and abundant place to practice being in my body. At that time, of course, I didn't have the language for it. I just felt that I was just like, wow, this is just fun, yeah. You know, and to be able to move and not be, you know, encumbered by like the street or a car coming or like other people watching you was just such a beautiful gift. Wow. And I think my mother saw that in me. My sister and I had to be engaged in something. And my sister is very musical. So she was always in piano lessons or cello lessons. And for me, it was dance. And it started out, like you would imagine, ballet, tap, jazz, Miss Connie's, in a very yes. kind of like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, same. I was like in the strip mall as a kid.
Literally, like, it was like mm-hmm. maybe as big as a studio. And mm-hmm. it was just like one bar. And we would do ballet for like 20 minutes. And we'd change into our tap shoes. Mm-hmm. And then we'd change into our jazz shoes, like all, mm-hmm. all in like an hour. Then dance became something for me that I understood movement to be something that could be more structured and expressive and you could be guided and you could get good at it. Mm-hmm. So that was really exciting to me until it stopped being exciting. You know, so it became something that was a space of freedom that moved into a space of like curiosity, like, oh, this is something that I can challenge myself to be better at. Then it became something that like became competitive and then mm-hmm. I started to feel bad about myself through it. Like all the ways that, you know, in this society as a young woman, you're called to feel bad about your body or bad about your ability to be good or to be the best. Yeah. And a lot of that came up for me dancing, but also on the flip side, the joy of just moving and expressing equally. You know, this is like this toggling between the part of it that felt kind of destructive to my self-esteem and the part of it that was illuminating all aspects of my creativity in equal measure. Right. It's been that way for so much of my life until I stopped dancing professionally.
So let's talk about that a minute. What happened? Did it lead you to New York City?
Yeah, I mean, New York was my end goal for a long, long time. And it was directly tied to dance and the idea of like the only place I could see myself dancing or that I understood that had a real dance community where you could actually get paid and be a dancer and have some like measure of respectability was in New York City. Mm-hmm. And I understood that. So I, you know, from Miss Connie's dance school, Miss Connie thought that I was very talented. And she was like, you know, she's going to outgrow me. You should have her audition at the University of Cincinnati. So at that time, the University of Cincinnati was connected to Cincinnati Ballet and they had this like pre-professional school.
Wow.
So I auditioned and then that became my life for middle school, high school. I was dancing almost every day after school.
Wow.
I was on point shoes, the whole nine yards. It was a, you know, we're talking about Cincinnati, Ohio in the like mid to late 80s into the 90s when this was my life. And it was, again, this like these dualities that were very hard for me to kind of come to terms with as mm-hmm. a young woman. So I loved going to dance class. I loved ballet. I loved moving up the levels in that pre-professional school and the changing of the leotards. And I wanted to get a blue leotard and yeah. all the things. Yeah. But also I was the only Black girl for a long time. I have a body. I was not a stick. I will never be a stick. I had a butt and I had boobies and I was muscular and I was all of the things, right? And so mm-hmm. that space, as much as it taught me to love my ability to express myself, it also taught me to hate my body. And I knew it was wrong, right? Like
I
did not have kind of the language that we have now to talk about diversity and to talk about beauty in the expansive mm-hmm. way that we think about beauty now. There was none of that,
right?
I just needed to fix myself. And so it was
and probably fit into a space.
Yeah, and fit in. Because I just wanted to fit in. I was yep. just like, I don't want to be like, look, I was just like, look, y'all, I just want to dance like everybody else. I don't want to, like, I'm not here for this, mm-hmm. right? For all this, whatever this is that you're throwing my way. I just want to dance.
Yeah.
And so you would audition every summer with everyone for ABT and New York City Ballet, never got in, you know, for their summer programs. And then one summer, Chicago School of Ballet, I don't even know if they still exist, but Maria Tallchief, who was like the first Native American dancer, she was still dancing with them. They had come to Cincinnati and I got into their summer program, and that changed everything for me. And I knew that I could do it. And I knew that there was this place called Dance Theater of Harlem where there were black ballerinas. And that was like, it felt like utopia. Like, if I get to New York, I can see these black ballerinas. Like, I could not even imagine that there was a place where there were just like who I was would be celebrated. And so that's what drove my college applications. I only applied to colleges in and around New York City. Like, it was, I was not going anywhere else. And so I ended up at Vassar, and they had a dance program there, and I was very active in their dance program. And they had dancers or dance teachers who were affiliated with Alvin Ailey. And there was one particular woman, Miss Forsyth. Oh, she's incredible, who, you know, said to me, she was visiting at Vassar, and she's like, you should come to Ailey. But I was like, no, I'm Dance Theater of Harlem. So anyway, so then I, you know, it was at Vassar and had too many credits and didn't know I had too many credits and could have graduated early, but instead I'd spent a semester in Kenya and then a semester in New York City dancing on scholarship at Dance Theater of Harlem, which was a whole other experience. You can tell me when I should stop talking, but that was a whole other, you know, I mean, like it's never easy right there. Yeah. I didn't feel that I completely fit in because at that time, it's changed now, but at that time, that space was very much dealing with colorism. Like there were, you know, the light-skinned Puerto Rican girls were the ones who were getting shine. I was not, you know, it was not happening for me. And one of the principal dancers who has since passed on, Lloyd, I'll never forget this, called me over after class one day. He was in the company and I was on scholarship. He was like, baby, it's not going to happen for you here. He's like, go to Ailey. Go to Ailey. He's like, they'll love you at Ailey. They'll know what to do with you at Ailey. Wow. He was like, you can dance. And he was like, I don't want you to stay here any longer because I can see that you're starting to feel like you can't dance.
Wow.
And he was like, your talent is not the problem.
Yeah.
He's like, they're just not ready. And I auditioned for Ailey, got on scholarship, and then was asked to join the second company. And then that was a whole other thing, you know, so it goes on and on and on and on. Yeah.
I mean, it's so big. And like, I have a small dance background, but like those names and, you know, like I wanted to be a Rockette. That was never going to happen. But, you know, it's like to hear your story and to be inspiring to all of the people out there that do, like, that's what makes you so powerful and so strong and your story so inspiring, because it's like you knew where you wanted to be. And then you listened, and then you followed that listening into this other, and you keep evolving it.
Well, you know, there's just something that I think about, like what the cost of being, whatever word you want to use, discounted, dismissed, marginalized, not seen as worthy, all these things. And we can talk about the real cost to that in terms of your psyche, your sense of yourself. But there's also something that can happen where when you are pushed to the margins, you have such a clear view of everything, the center, everybody else on the margins, and kind of the ridiculousness of the so-called standard.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that in that being pushed out or not included, you create your own spaces.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, now I'm like, thank you. Mm-hmm. Because if I had stayed in your like basic ass like norms, I would not have been able to kind of craft a life for myself that spoke to the things that I love and care about. And we see that all the time. Right. I mean, that's the birth of hip hop, right? Yep. Like we think about like the ways that creativity emerges from being pushed to the so-called margins and creating not new centers, but new spaces for everyone to kind of move through and find themselves.
And friends, this is why Amy's on the show. She is a visionary. She pushes the boundaries. You're such an inspiration. Like, honestly.
Oh, stop
and
it.
You do it with such, like, ease. You know, like, people, we were talking about it before, you know, on the walk here. It's like, the world is a weird place right now. So much darkness is happening. Mm. And like, how do we break through the darkness is with the light. And the light is not the norm. The light is newness. The light is a vision.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. And that's who you are. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Jill.
I want to talk a little bit about how you moved into anthropology and like in how you became a professor, because it's like, you know, you encompass this like study of dance and the body and the movement. And now you're in a same but different spot.
Yeah. I how did I become a professor? Part of what I will say and I will claim, if I can claim something, is that I do think I have been able to, and this is a privilege because I've had a lot of support around me in my life. I've had a very supportive and nurturing family life. Like, I just want to name that because sometimes people say, oh, just believe it. Oh, just, and so I just want to name that there are some structural factors mm-hmm. that are important that you need in order to be able to do these. So I had came from a very strong family. So I had that support that enabled me, I think, to follow what I loved and to get out of spaces that did not love me back. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has that ability to do that. So I did have that. And so when I was at Vassar, so you can understand there's a certain level of privilege, even though I was not, you know, sort of on scholarship in some ways, but there's still like, I want to name that because mm-hmm. I do think that when I hear folks talk and they're like, yeah, and I just believed in myself and I just always knew, or, you know, I just did this thing because I had my heart's desires. Like, let's also talk about the fact that there are real structural factors that prevent people from being able to dream in the ways that they want to. And there's also structural factors that enable folks to kind of push through those boundaries. And I was mm-hmm. very fortunate to have family, one, and to have the benefit of being in these educational institutions that gave me the tools that I needed in order to kind of craft the life that I have now. So I was at Vassar and loved writing, really, really loved writing, and thought I would be an English major, and then took an anthropology course. And it just so happened that it wasn't like an intro course. It was like an advanced course. I was a freshman in the wrong class, but I ended up staying in it. And we were reading all these really beautiful ethnographies. And I was like, oh, I want to write like this. Like, I want, what I loved about ethnographies, or at least the ones we were reading, was that it wasn't just like these really beautiful, like really beautiful writing, but it was just as much about coming into new communities, meeting people, engaging with them, learning from them, being humble, and like being able to express that new connection. And so I was like, oh, I want to be an anthropologist. And I felt like it really, for me, brought together all the things that I love. There was like this idea of meeting new people, coming into new communities, writing, documenting, going off to other places, exploring, like everything that I loved in this one discipline. I, at that time, was not fully aware of the colonial past of anthropology, but really of all Western knowledge, let's mm-hmm. just be real. And then was not surprised, but like, oh, this is interesting. And again, was another moment where I was like, oh, the way that I understand this discipline is kind of from a Black feminist perspective. Like, you enter communities with humility, you respect the things that people tell you about their lives, you learn from them, and you write in ways that honor that experience. And so that kind of understanding of anthropology was completely opposed to the true history of the discipline. But I still felt there was a way to carve out a different way of doing ethnography that honors and respects folks and is really about like the artistry of documenting someone's life from their perspective as much as possible. Yeah. And so that's what became an anthropology major, and then was dancing in Ailey's Second Company and was always like reading ethnographies and reading, you know, James Baldwin, and mm-hmm. just in my own like library, in my own like bibliography, while we were on tour on the tour bus, I would have this list of books that I wanted to read while we were on tour. And so I was equally invested in the dancing that was happening on tour as much as I was like this kind of education I was giving myself. This is after I graduated from Vassar. And after 2.5 years with the Ailey Second Company, I realized how much I love dance and how much I despised the dance world of concert mm-hmm. dance at that time, mm-hmm. and really loved being on stage and being free on stage. Did not like everything else that came with it, the comparison, the meanness that was really a part of that dance space that I don't think is no longer allowed.
Yeah.
Like, it is, you just cannot, there's no way you could talk to young dancers the way that we were talked to. Like, there's just no way. I was applying for graduate programs in anthropology. Like, I was talking to my sister and I was like, I love anthropology and I've been mm-hmm. reading and I want to go back to that. And so that's what led me to the doctoral program at the University of Michigan. They have a really tremendous anthropology department, and that danced with Ailey for 2 years and then was off to my PhD program in Michigan.
Yeah.
And that's what birthed my first book, which was my dissertation, Shapeshifters, Black Girls and the Choreography of Citizenship, which is based on my time working as a director of a homeless shelter in Detroit. That was
which is amazing. So yeah. Like, please, everyone needs to like pick up this book.
Yes, please.
because it really is this encompass of like your work in all of the areas.
That
we're all so grateful for.
Have you read
for.
It? It sounds like you have the way you just said that.
I've
like,
read
it
an excerpt. I haven't read the whole thing.
But no, I'm not like quizzing you. Yeah. But I think that's right. And I don't think I realized it until after mm-hmm. the book was published and some years after it had been circulating. The book, I believe, was published in 2015.
Yeah.
But it takes a while, especially for an academic text, to get a life
totally.
Of its own. It's like travel. People are teaching yes. it. And so it was several years before I really was able to see how that text was sort of the coming together of everything that I loved, you know, young Black women, thinking about that, who were community activists as they were living in a homeless shelter. Mm-hmm. Incredible women, incredible. And dance.
Yeah. And your experience with all of these people and your work and your studies and putting it all together.
Yeah.
It's magnificent.
I mean, I cannot read that book now. Like, I cannot open it and look at it. Like, and when people tell me that they're teaching it and they're like, can you come to a class visit? I tend to say no now more than yes, because it's just such a, well, all books are, even though we don't give books the grace to name that they're a moment in time. I mean, there's books that are timeless, but those books are a moment in time where that author was, where the writer was in their life, the way yeah. that they were thinking about the world, what was happening in that moment. And so it's very much a moment of in time in terms of my own thinking and development. And so sometimes I'm like, I would have mm-hmm. written that differently, or why did I see that way? But I still honor who I was in that moment and the relationships that I had with those incredible young women in Detroit who were living in a homeless shelter as they were actively advocating for change to happen in Detroit. Can you imagine? You don't have a home and yet you're invested in transforming the city that you live in.
It's so That's much. Like,
anyway.
It's so much.
Yeah. Mad respect to those young women.
The most love. This is the sound of something good. That's right. It's a can of Good Spirits French Exhale, a non-alcoholic take on the classic drink, the French 75. It has secret ingredients of valerian root, lavender, and fast-acting hemp to really allow you to relax. Check out the other two flavors of Good Spirits. The Spiced Paloma is a version of everyone's favorite tequila cocktail. Sip this one by the pool, at the beach, or at any of your favorite bars. It will make you feel like vacation mode is on. And the Austin Palmer, their version of the Arnold Palmer, combined with organic black tea, lemonade, and sparkling water to create the taste of a perfect summer day. A blend of B12 vitamins and hemp will balance and elevate your mood. Pick up Good Spirits online at goodspiritsbeverages.com and at any of their nationwide stockists, including the Jillinzy Cafe. And make sure to follow them on Instagram at Good Spirits Beverages. Amy, you have such an incredible like sense of things. You know, we've just talked about culture and movement and your sensibilities and your knowledge and the way you like go into experience. You know, I want to talk more about, like, we'll do another show where it's just you and your travels, you know, because I feel like you immerse yourself in ways that a lot of people don't know how to. Mm. Like, you're just so special at that. And one of those things which I find so special about you is your absolute love of fragrance.
Yeah.
Like, friends,
it's ridiculous.
No.
This could be a whole show.
It will be a show.
Whole thing.
Like, then we'll have travel, then we'll have fragrance, then we'll have movement. You know, we'll keep going. But the first time I went to Amy's house, I walked in and she was like, these are the perfumes. And I was like, oh. And then pull out from under the bed, like boxes, huge boxes of like hundreds of perfume.
Organized them.
How many do you have?
At last count, 287
fragrances, people. Fragrances.
Yeah. And
they're all like, very, you know, the last time you came into the store and hung out with me, you were like, I found this one, but you can only find it in like the Dubai airport of the thing. And I was like, what the heck? Where did this love of scent come from?
I keep asking myself that because my mother was not a big perfume wearer. She did. She loved Clinique aromatics. No, aromatics elixir, that big, it was a dense, very dense and thick and patchouli. And she loved that. And so we would get her that every Christmas. Mm-hmm. Aromatics elixir, that's what I associate with my mom. But she was not like a big perfume wearer. I don't remember like associating. I spent a lot of time with my grandmother. She smelled like Nivea lotion. But I do yeah. think that I just, maybe not perfume, but smells and scent have always been very like evocative for me, have always moved me. And my sister, you're probably too young to remember this, but Calyx Prescriptives. Do you remember Prescriptives? It was like a makeup brand. And they had this perfume that was like the It Girl perfume. Like if it was out now, I guess Hailey Bieber would be wearing it or something. It was called Calyx. And it was just so distinctive. And it was expensive enough that if you had it as a teenager, you were like, oh. And everybody was would recognize it. I guess now, I don't know, like Baccarat is this equivalent to that. You smell it everywhere, but it's also like, oh, you paid some money for that. And my sister had it and she wouldn't let me wear it. And I would try to steal it and she would know I'd wear it. And so before I went away to college, I got myself a bottle and it just felt like protection in some ways. It was like the scent that I thought would mark me as like, oh, I'm in the know. You know, I not even that it was sort of more expensive than other perfumes that I was able to afford at the time, but it just felt like a protection. Yeah, like it marked me in a certain way.
Yeah.
And so I've always felt that fragrance did that. Like it did something. It wasn't just that I liked the smell, because I have tons of fragrances that I don't even really wear, but I have them because they do something for me when I smell them, but I wouldn't want anyone to smell them on me necessarily. Yeah. And so like the way that I think about fragrance is very much, it does something. It's a form of protection, or it is ceremonial, or it is deeply tied to a memory, a time in my life. And there's fragrances that I have to actually get rid of because they are so deeply tied to a time that I'm no longer want to be connected to. But I see fragrance as part of like the ritual of my days and my life. I cannot imagine not waking up and putting on a perfume.
So, I mean, and Amy smells so amazing. Whenever you're around her, you're just like, what is that? How
do I go through phases, you know? So I was in a deep, layer. Smoky, incense-y. If I didn't layer, I'm never going to use these perfumes. So in order to buy a new one, every now and then I'll pack up a box of like 10 ones and I'm just like, I'm not wearing these. And I'll send them to my mom. Aww. So she now has her own collection, because if I'm buying more, I feel like I have to kind of cycle them out. But I go through phases. I was in like an incense-y, smoky, deep, deep oud phase. And then I go through like really like sweet, sugary, like teeny bopper phase. And then I go through like floral, old school, like, you know, I move through these different phases and they're very much connected to what I'm feeling and what energy I'm trying to like carry with me. I will say one thing. Can I tell you a little fragrance story?
Yes.
So shout out to Ty, Yoga Ty. You should take his yoga classes. He's incredible. But anyway, Ty is this really beautiful yoga teacher in Brooklyn and also happens to work at the fragrance counter in Bloomingdale's in Soho.
So interesting.
I knew Ty first as a yogi. And then, you know, I'm walking around and going to Bloomingdale's and I'm like, oh my God, of course I love you. You're like working at the fragrance counter. He doesn't just work there. He also loves fragrance. Ty comes on my retreat in Portugal, right? And so we're like, like sharing perfumes and all excited. First day, as we're sort of doing introductions and getting to know folks, this one of the women on the retreat says, you know, I just want everybody to know, I cannot deal with scent. I cannot deal with fragrance. And Ty and I look at each other like,
no.
And she's like, so, you know, so they had to take the like incense out of, you know, the sticks, the diffuser out of her room. And then Ty and I are like, what does this mean for our lives over the next few days? And she was like, really, like if you wear heavy perfume or if you wear any perfume, like please, can you not wear it during this retreat? And so I'm running, leading the retreat and I'm just like, I don't know if that's going to be possible. So we go on this excursion and there's like two vans taking us to like this excursion. And we're both standing there like, what van is she going to get on? Because we can't get on the same van with her because we like could not be without like scent. And then in that moment, I was like, this is not like just about sort of the ego, I need to smell good. Like it is deeply a part of like getting dressed.
Yes.
Not just grooming, but like being completely dressed. And then to meet Ty, I'm like, oh, I'm not alone.
Yes. Yes.
But now my fragrances are beautifully organized because my boyfriend, which I really appreciate, and he says this about many things, you know, he says this about my compulsion to want to explain the class, for example, to folks who don't understand it. He says this about my love of fragrance. He's like, why do you always feel the need that you have to explain your joy to people? Just be in your joy. You don't have to explain it to everybody. They don't have to understand it. That changed so much for me. And in that, he said, why are you like treating these perfumes like you're ashamed of them? He's like, get a cabinet.
Get them out there.
Like,
get them
out there.
Like, you are. You have a museum of fragrance.
He's like, you know, just own it. Like, step into that. And so I got this beautiful white cabinet with these glass doors. And you walk in and it's like, oh.
Yes.
Like, you know. And so now I can just like play around and see everything. And it doesn't feel like, I mean, so many things. Maybe this is a life lesson for us. Like, so many things that we think of as like things we should hide or be ashamed of. And then they become these things in our lives that are like dark clouds, which really are the source of what makes us who we are.
So much
that we
joy.
Should celebrate and share, actually. And so now I have this perfume cabinet, and I really need to become a TikTok influencer with my perfume.
Yes,
perfumes.
You do.
But I just don't have the time.
And
also, I'm just like, and I don't even have a TikTok.
Well, you're about to have some time.
But
and
I have so much to say about fragrance because it's tied to everything we've talked about.
Yeah.
Travel, connection, memory, movement, joy.
Well, I feel from the card in the beginning and the time that is coming into your life, my last quick moment with you, I would like to know if you know, this is always like the moment of like, what do you want to do in the future? Next, this.
Oh.
Like, what do you want to put out into the world? We all know how inspiring you are. We all know how beautiful. Like, I already know. I'm like, I want Amy to do a full day at Jill Lindsay that's like a sensory experience and there's movement and scent. And I have my own idea what I want to do with you. But what would be something, and it can be anything.
Yeah.
And this is, the Newsstand Studio is the sacred place of putting it out into the world.
It happens, it materializes.
Oh, okay, it does.
Let's go.
Yeah. Hold hands.
Oh, I should name everything. What do I want to materialize? Well, first, immediately, I have a second book that I really need to write that is a spirit book, a love book, and about someone I deeply care about. But I do want to figure out how to bring all these threads that we've been talking about together in a way that is more consistent and regular and can be an immersive experience for folks. And I'm not sure what that is, but it does involve movement and it does involve aesthetics and beauty and joy. And I do think it includes writing and dance. And I'm doing something like that this evening, but I think more of that, like in a way that is sustainable and it's not like a one-off, but really brings communities of folks together to explore expression and creativity in a way that is joyful and generative so that we can create a new world or new worlds, plural, but we need it desperately. And I think it starts with our ability to own our power, our creativity.
May it be. I feel it.
Thank you.
I mean,
that.
You have this time coming up for you to just figure out how to make it happen.
Yeah.
And we're all here to support you and we're all waiting for it because obviously we all need you.
Thank you.
And love you and
want you so much. Thank you for this.
I love you so much. Well, as we end this amazing episode, which will be continued into the fragrance episode and the travel episode and all of the things, let's pull a card for the end of the show.
The first time I was feeling it, this time I'm just going to like go eyeball with the one that's...
The Wheel of Fortune.
Ooh.
This is a major arcana card. This is a beautiful woman sitting in a field. There's mountains, there's sacred geometry, there's stars, there's clouds, there's nature, there's gazing off into the distance. It is such a special card. And as we think about the Wheel of Fortune, you know, as I turn directly to the page.
Wow.
It is just as the seasons change in an everlasting cycle of energy, so does the path of your life. For every situation, there tends to be an archetypal opposite that keeps the balance intact. I mean, you've been talking about this since the beginning of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding the Wheel of Fortune signifies a state of acceptance that things may be good or bad at any time. Do not be discouraged by the difficulties or the low points, these too will pass. In modeling unconditional love and gratitude, it is easier to identify the positive moments as they come, which manifest abundance into your life. Know that sometimes you may need to take the leap into the unknown in order to move forward. Yes. You alone have the power to create the life you desire and overcome any challenges along the way. That is what the wheel is all about.
Roll a dice.
Transformation, transition, change, new beginnings, life lessons, and the Akashic Records.
I love that. I love those two together.
Hello.
Yeah.
This is you, Amy. This is you. And we love you so much. So everybody, you can follow Amy on Instagram.
It's A-I-M-E-E underscore M-E-R-E. My middle name is Meredith, so it's just Amy Mayer.
Mm-hmm. You can find her at the class. You can take a class with her, not till 2025, but at NYU. You can find her at Prema Brooklyn.
Yeah, on Instagram at Prema Yoga Brooklyn. I'm doing several workshops that combine what we were talking about, writing and movement. And if you follow me on Instagram, anything that I'm doing, I'll post there.
And then we'll get the TikTok up with the fragrance stuff soon.
Yeah, I'm gonna hire one of my students to help me.
Amy, thank you for being a gift in this life, in this world, to all of us, to all those you touch, to your wisdom and your knowledge. Thank you for being here and sharing your magical moments with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe, our amazing friend at the Newsstand Studio. We love you. Thank you, Rockefeller Center.
Hey, hey.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next time, many, many magical moments.
Thank you for joining us. Be sure to follow us on our social media at Joe Lindsay Store, #magical moments.